We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. History is long. And while this virus is a crisis, in historical terms, it's a blip. There was life before the crisis, and there will be life after. The uncertainty is we don't know what this is going to do to us as a community, to us as a city, to us as a nation, to the globe. But there will be life after. And while that sounds kind of self-evident, it's an important perspective to hold on to if we're going to come out of these troubles better than we entered them. And that's what the spiritual tradition offers us, is the opportunity to go into moments like this and come out on the other side better than we went in. The tradition invites us to look up, to see something bigger than our troubles, to give some mind space and to give some heart space to something bigger than the concerns that feel so urgent in this moment. Now, you've probably seen this important, urgent grid. Well, the spiritual tradition adds a component to it. It says, even in times of crisis, when things are both urgent and important, even then, reserve some space to keep asking the question, who am I going to be when I come out of this crisis? Who am I going to be when this historical blip has passed? Now, the question before us is, will I come out the other side having used all of my energy during these troubles, living from and reinforcing my ego strategies? Will I have spent all of this time reinforcing those habitual thoughts and feelings from which I live, or will I have allowed the troubles to break up those entrenched habits so that I can access something deeper? This has been a big theme for our lessons since the virus began, because this is a really difficult time. It's hard to hold on to this whole self perspective when the news every night is so painful. It's hard to be wrestling with our demons because we thought we could do better, or we thought we could be better or be stronger or more unflappable. We hate that we're weaker than we thought we were, or more fearful than the story we like to tell ourselves about ourselves. Sometimes we cringe when we realize that when the going gets tough, I can be kind of an ass. Or I can get kind of obsessed with Clorox wipes or toilet paper. We hate seeing our distraction strategies kick in, how much we drink or how much we binge, all to avoid seeing what's really going on inside. It's hard wrestling with our inner demons, especially while we're working on an employment website that's not working, or when getting groceries is an existential threat, or when we have to work, but we've got a house full of kids. And so, spiritual tradition, I should also focus on who I'm going to be on the other side of this crisis? And very gently, the tradition encourages us, yes, yes, also focus on who I'm going to be on the other side of this crisis. Come on, the tradition gently encourages us, do the self-care. Because when extra is being sucked out, we need to be diligent to put extra back in. Come on, the tradition gently encourages us, take care of one another, help one another, listen to one another, because as we saw, helping one another, yes, it helps one another, but it also helps us hold on to a larger perspective that's bigger than our own pain and bigger than our own fear. If you missed the first couple lessons, you can catch up on online. Well, today, let's reinforce this important theme. We can help one another. We can help one another come out of this, the other side of this thing, no matter what this world will look like on the other side of this thing. We can come out of it better able to access our inner angels, better able to access our higher selves. That's what times of crisis do in the spiritual tradition. When we do get back to the building, you're going to see a couple new banners in the lobby. We ordered them just a little while before the shutdown. Beth, who does such great images on our website, she did a couple new ones for the lobby. The first says, if you're here, you belong. And that's one of the things we want people to see when they walk in the front door. There's also one that says, we find the divine better together. We find the divine better together. And that's the one we're going to focus on today. We find the divine better together. This week I had another We Are Better Together conversation. I was doing my one contact a day, five times a week. And I was checking in with a woman in our community, and I asked her, as I often do, so how's your soul? She asked the same of me, and I told her about some of the things that I'm grappling with. And along the way, she told me a story. I asked her if I could tell it to you, and she said I could. And she said, you know, I haven't told many people about this because it's just been so hard. She said, I've been on the edge now for two straight weeks. And on the edge is a nice way of saying it. A better way to say it is, I have been working really hard to keep panic down, to keep panic at bay, because my child has asthma. And Wake County Schools waited a few extra days before they closed. And I knew all about the virus, and I knew all about the risk groups, and I knew my child was at risk. It's not like we didn't talk about it, she said. We did. We had a family discussion. We weighed it seriously. Should the child go to school? Should the child stay home? There was a case to be made on both sides, and we came down on the side, stay in school through Friday, and then after that, school closed. Which, she said, I'm sure was a struggle for every Wake County parent, probably every parent in our nation, but that, she said, isn't the story. The story is what happened to me after my child came home from school. She said, I have been in misery for 14 days. It has been a panicked vigil, waiting to see if my child would die of the virus. It wasn't really because the virus is dangerous. It wasn't really even that he was in the risk group. What was driving my panic, where the real energy came from, was that I said yes to him staying in school. And she said, I'm relatively young, in my 40s. She didn't say that, I just know that. But she said, it wouldn't matter if I lived to 100. I know I could never forgive myself. If my child gets sick, and because of the asthma, if my child dies, I will never be able to forgive myself. I will never again be able to live life fully. And so, she said, for 14 days, on the outside, people saw a sane woman, but on the inside, I have been ravaged. Ravaged by borrowed guilt, ravaged by self-condemnation, ravaged knowing that my life was going to end if this thing went badly. I knew that I would be facing a lifetime of how could I? How did I? Now, I mentioned in the announcements that we study the Enneagram together. We do that so that we can learn the pitfalls that each one of our personalities has so that we can know how to sidestep those pitfalls and move forward on the spiritual journey. Well, this woman's personality has a gift-curse dynamic like all personality types do, and hers goes something like this. She has a knack for looking down the line and seeing potential troubles. And she has a knack for formulating a plan that's going to help her and anyone who will listen to her go around that potential painful future. It's a gift, except when it's a curse. As personality gifts do, hers easily morphed into the presumption of omnipotent capacity. That's happened to me. That happens to all of us. In other words, if I can see a danger, if I can, am I able to make plans to avoid that danger? Well, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from there to the unspoken, unarticulated, usually unconscious belief that all of the responsibility for all of the pain for all of the people that I love, it's all on me. The curse side of the gift is when the gift becomes an identity, a self, a way that we are us. Because then, once I see the danger, if I don't plan around it or if I don't plan properly, all of the responsibility is mine. So, of course, I could never forgive myself. It doesn't matter that other families weighed in on the discussion. It doesn't matter that infection wasn't a sure thing. It doesn't matter that the child needed some outside the house time. Once the gift becomes the curse, and it is me, I don't know when to not be it or do it, and nothing can mitigate the story, I killed my child, and I will never be able to forgive myself. Fortunately, we were talking on the 15th day, and the child did not get ill, so we were really talking about what happened inside of her. So you know about this self-awareness, self-disclosure practice that we do together as a community. If you don't, you can go on the website, and right under the, I think it's the Get Involved tab, you can read all about it. But when we are doing this listening process with one another, we ask this question. Have you seen this pattern before in some other setting? We're processing this thing that you just went through, but have you seen that same pattern somewhere else before? So, if it wasn't in this case about the virus or asthma or school, is the pattern familiar territory? And so I asked her that. And she paused a moment, and then she started talking about her kids in driver's training. If my child asked to drive, she said, and I said yes, and there was an accident, and then my child died. Same thing. I could never forgive myself. I could live to 100 and never fully live again. Because, the inner narrative goes, this is what I do. This is who I am. I am the look down the road-er. I am the see potential harm-er. I am avoiding problems by making a plan and sticking to the plan-er. And if I don't do what I know is my role to do in the world, well, of course, never forgive myself. Every personality has a knack for something or other, and these knacks we come to rely on. They become how we make it in this wild world. We turn that knack into an identity. We depend on it so much and start to tell ourselves a story. This is who I am. It's not a gift that I have to give. No, it defines me. It is me. And that's when the trap snaps. That's when the gift becomes a curse. And that's when we begin to bear the pain for the rest of our days, living out an identity that isn't who we are. An ill-fitting version of self that can't but curse our lives. Now again, the story ended well, but a couple things about it. Now, because she practices self-awareness and self-disclosure, she has learned to be on the lookout for afflictive emotions. She doesn't do the self-awareness, self-disclosure worksheet every time, but she's done them so many times that now her mind kind of naturally seeks out, what is the thing under the thing? What is the story I am telling myself? So it was a really easy conversation to have because she was already there. She was already stepping into self-awareness. All I did was listen. And in that listening context, she stepped back for a moment from the toxicity of her story. And a better story was right there, just waiting to emerge. She said something like this, I would never do what I do to myself, to my daughter. And she said, if my daughter let her cat out, she really loves her cat. If my daughter let her cat out and a coyote ate the cat, and she couldn't forgive herself, and she was telling herself a story, oh my God, I killed my cat. She said, that would break my heart. What a harmful story she is telling herself. I could see that for her. And I would do everything I could to help her rethink her story. But, she said, try to mount that same kind of campaign for myself. Good luck. And that's how it is. That's what it is to be inside of a shadow self. That's what it is to carry the blind spots that we carry. That's what it is to have lesser identities than our divine center selves. We find the divine better together. We find the divine better together. Now, the second thing about that story, she'd be the first to tell you, for all the insight she has about her inner narrative, as much as she can disidentify it with it and stand back and say, that's kind of a crazy story I tell myself, that doesn't mean it's gone. It's still in there. And it's still dictating the terms of how life goes. Because her gift, like all of our gifts, became an identity. Hers is a danger-seeing, trouble-avoiding, and planning identity. And that worked so well in so many contexts. It's hard for us, it's hard for her, for every one of us to let those core stories go. Because they don't want to go. But I've been watching people walk this spiritual journey for a long time. I've walked it myself for a long time. And what she did when she told her story in the context of a spiritual friendship, she took that story and that belief and that interior construct about who she is and she put it outside of herself so she could talk about it. And when she did, it stopped being equal to her, and it became a smaller thing than self. It's a thing that she does. It's a habit. It's a strong habit, but it is not her very self. And I just know from experience, it won't be very far down this path, and that dragon will be slain. Because we find the inner divine better together. Now, these days, we're living on a pretty steady diet of bad news. These are real people. This is real suffering. And it's easy to miss the thing that I began with in this morning's lesson. Stand back as far as we need to stand back, and we will see that there was life before this crisis and there will be life afterwards. But that perspective, it helps us reserve some space for the not urgent but important work of observing what our thought habits are doing to us, seeing where our emotional habits are hijacking us, and seeing that our thoughts and our feelings, they're not the whole story. It's an important perspective that there was life before, there will be life after, that we hold on to because it helps us reserve some space. One of the big painful things that we are going through right now is all of the uncertainty. There's no finish date that's very clear for us. We don't know when this is going to end. Pray to God, it's short, but it might be long. And we don't know when this will end, but we do know that on the other side of this, there will be life, and we will be. And the question is, who? Who will we be on the other side? And so the invitation is to seek the indwelling presence in this moment of difficulty, to access that place inside of us where there is nobility and virtue and goodness and wisdom and courage. In the spiritual world, moments of trouble are worth 100 normal moments because these moments offer us a golden opportunity to unearth the self that is under the self. So now is the time for us to be working the circle. Now is the time for us to be doing the communal practices. Now is the time for listening to one another and calling out the wisdom that is already in there. Now is the time to be calling out the generosity and the compassion and the concern that we all have deep within us because they're there. Deeper than whatever your version is of all the responsibility to plan around all the pain in all the universe, whatever your version of that is, there is within you courage and strength and wisdom and capacity at a deeper level. And now is the time to stand with one another, to help one another find the divine better together. In our presence with one another, our listening, our sharing of this moment, we have a profound capacity to help one another move forward. The infection peak is coming in Wake County this week, next, and that's a scary truth. But here's another truth. Someone you know is even more scared than you are, and you can help that person be less dominated by their fear. And you can help that person access the deeper reality that is inside of them. And they can conversely do the same for you. When we share our troubled times together, we grasp the opportunity that this moment gives us to examine our lives and to see how we live and to see the stories that drive us, to see the habits that dominate us. We can help one another emerge on the other side freer of those unseen narratives that run our days. And so that's my prayer. That's why I asked you to put in all the work. And again, thank you. So, my prayer is that we would together find the divine. And my prayer is that we would stand together. And you have been moving the groups online. You have been making your contact with one another. And may I encourage you, keep going. Keep doing that. Keep checking in with your neighbors and your coworkers. Keep connecting with one another. Keep asking, it's a great question, how is your soul? How are you doing? Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And as you're doing that, if you are keeping your job, remember what I say all the time, Common Thread is a good place to invest your time and your energy and your love and the dollars that it will take for us to emerge from this crisis on the other side. So you can donate on our website. There's a link above the live stream to donate. And having done that, tell me, what are you thinking about? What is God stirring up in your heart? And Gene told me that he would text some of your comments to me on my phone here. So let's just go look. There it is. All right, so Gene says, deconstruction seems to be the most important task I have found in the second half of my life, a continuous activity, what to do with what I learn. You know. Oh, here's a bunch of them. Sue said, the self-awareness, self-disclosure practice has showed me patterns inside of myself. Same kinds of fears. What if my kid is in a car accident? Different reasons, different self-identification, different story. So grateful for this practice. I can't encourage you enough. Take up the practice. It's powerful. Angie says, this is a big lesson for me. I'm going through this process, and I call it deconstructing. It's so weird because my whole life, the narrative was constructive. The idea of, hey, watch me build things. Angie, we share that narrative. Deconstruction feels good, like putting down a burden, but it also feels like being lost, and it feels like losing something, like maybe I'm squandering my potential. Every one of our stories is there for a reason. It's there because we got something out of it. My story is weakness is bad, vulnerability is bad, so reconfigure my emotional world so I never feel bad emotions. Reconfigure my circumstances so I'm never dependent on anyone or anything because you can never depend on them. I've got these core narratives, and here's the thing. They made me very successful in a lot of my life. And so when, years ago, they started getting chipped away, and I started making myself vulnerable. It felt like I was doing a bad thing. It felt like I was letting go of that which has gotten me all that affirmation, gotten me all that success, gotten me all that good stuff. And that happens to all of us. There's a reason why we have our false selves. It's because they worked. They got us something. And they keep coming along and reinforcing that thing. So when we start to let them go, just like Angie shared, yeah, it feels like I've let a burden down because we never realized those stories were toxic. We never realized that they were dripping a little bit of poison into the system every day. And over time, that poison accumulates and accumulates to the place where we're exhausted or spent or we can't make it in the world or we can't make our relationships work because that false self narrative, it is great in one context. It's a gift that we have to give. But when we make it an identity, it destroys us. And right now, this invitation is to come and let it destroy us. Let the pain deconstruct that thing that feels so much like me. And it will be difficult. As you've heard me say, the false self doesn't want to die. When Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me, for some of them it meant actually going on a cross, but for some of them it meant, and for us it means, letting go of that identity that I think is the me identity. So yeah, Angie, that's a great point. Let's see what else. Chris says, I think I have the self-awareness part down pretty well. It's the self-improvement part that falls behind. You're such a guy. So here's Gris Grabe. Even when I'm able to step back in self-awareness and view my thoughts and actions, I still have a pretty uncanny ability to kid myself. Let me tell you what's a great story. The great story is I'm doing great. The great story to tell ourselves is I'm thriving, I'm shining. Every one of us want to tell us that story, tell ourselves that story. Because when we tell ourselves that story, we get through. We get through the other side. But nevertheless, here's the thing. Self-awareness is self-awareness. That's a good point, Chris. Let's see. One more before we go. Sky says, I find that no matter how self-aware I become, the solution to my problem is usually that Jared Engstrom needs to change. Sky, that's funny. That is really funny. Michael says, I think this may be different than what you mean, but the piece about squandering potential resonated with me. I guess he was responding to Angie. I've noticed that my shadow side of shame and need to achieve has cropped up by making me feel like I'm not doing enough during this time for other people, not reaching out enough or in the right way or to the right people or not creating the right space for people. It's frustrating. We can beat ourselves up for anything. I was talking to another person, Michael, had that same response. It's a very common one. It just highlights how every one of our personalities has a different blind spot, a different weak spot. Here you are thinking, I could do good stuff because, you know, we know Michael. Michael is a competent guy. He's capable. He can do a lot of things. And when you are competent and capable and you wake up in that brain and you know you are competent and capable, then it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from there to I have to do all the things that need to be done in all of the universe. And that competency and that capacity is no longer a gift we give. It's an identity that defines who we are. And then when we go forward on that, then it begins to break us, begins to destroy us slowly. Because remember, you get a lot of affirmation for that. But I watched my life get destroyed until I fell into a depression that lasted 10 years because that's not a true self. I can get a lot of stuff done. I can mount capability. And boy, did that make me feel good as a young person. Look at me, capable. No one ever said to me, young boy, that's going to destroy you. Because nobody did. It destroyed me. The false self is false. We have gifts to give. We do. And we need to give those gifts. But that gift cannot be an identity. And that's what moments like these do. That's what moments of crisis do. They come and reveal what has always been, but we were subsidized by our comforts that we didn't have to see. And now, this opportunity. Remember what I said during the lesson. Moments of trouble are worth 100 normal moments. Because this is when we get to see. C.S. Lewis said something, I don't think I've got the quote right, but he said, in our pleasure, the divine whispers to us, but in our pain, the divine shouts. It can't be more clear than it's becoming in these days. And so again, my prayer for us is that we become people of kindness and goodness and that we stand with one another and that we find the divine better together. Well, if you would, put your hand on your heart, and let's remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. Everything you need to get through this thing, it's in you. Everything you need to stand with others and help them get through this and be stood with by them so that they get to help you get through it. It's all inside of us because we carry the divine within. And then if you would, extend your other hand to our city, and let's look for opportunities to share what's in us with the people that we live with and work with, share the city with, the whole reason for self-awareness, the whole reason to deconstruct our faulty narratives is so we can access what we have to give one to another. And may that be what we do in these days of crisis that are before us. Amen. God bless you. We are dismissed. Love one another as we go. Head on over to What Are You Still Thinking? Remember, you can get the link on our website and you can get the password on our Facebook group. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.